Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Merculia from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who have come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
Of the 13 regional native corporations whose task it is to manage the money and land granted under the terms of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, all but the Seattle-based 13th Regional Corporation have land entitlements. Six of those 12, Otna, Chugach, Cook Inlet, Nana, Doyon, and Arctic Slope, share 16 million of the 44 million acre total under a complex provision of the Act called the Land Loss Formula. These regional land allocations are based on the size of the land area initially claimed rather than the size of the native population living in the claimed area. The provision was included in ANCSA largely at the urging of the Arctic Slope, whose oil-rich lands were a major impetus in getting Congress to move on a settlement, since oil companies needed to move the North Slope oil to market. The Arctic Slope claimed a large area, but had a small population. Under the land loss formula, entitlements range from about 336,000 acres for Chugach Corporation to 8.5 million acres for Doyon Limited. The Arctic Slope Regional Corporation's share is a little over 4 million acres. Ownership is of both the surface and subsurface estate, a matter of no small consequence given the developable resources on or under many of those lands. And the Act further states in one of its most controversial provisions, 7I, that 70% of all revenues derived from resource development must be shared among all 12 in-state ANCSA corporations. That one paragraph has caused all 12 to go to court against each other, a case that's been pending for most of the years since ANCSA was signed into law by then-President Richard Nixon on December 18, 1971. Both the land loss formula and 7I, the revenue-sharing provision, were intended to be equalizers in the settlement, providing resource revenues to regions without rich lands and additional land to those without large populations. This program, the seventh in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, will examine two regional corporations particularly affected by these provisions, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation in the north and Doyon Limited in the interior.
Dividing the mock-talk, it's the way it's always been. Dividing the mock-talk between family and friends. We're sailing towards a future, we're anchored in the past. Rich in our tradition, our way.
Those messages once again, Judy Sigvan of Wainwright called 4831 this afternoon. To the Wainwright people, anyone picking up two boxes by accident at the airport, please return to Mabel Bodfish's residence or to the school. To Robert Spurgeon in Nuiqsut, you have a green shoulder bag coming in on the flight from Barrow today.
Barrow is Alaska's northernmost community. This land of contrasts of light and darkness, sea mammal hunting and oil development is the regional center for North Slope Eskimos, seat of the North Slope Borough and headquarters for the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, ASRC. In 1979, ASRC's net worth was $14 million. In 1980, that increased to $24.3 million. That's without the value of the land entitlement, 4,615,000 acres.
It's a pretty large area. It's anything just about above the Brooks Range. So we're talking about probably 84,000 square miles, which is like a large state in the lower 48.
Oliver Levitt is a whaling captain and treasurer of the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, a position he has held since the corporation started in July 1972. There are less than 4,000 shareholders, most of them in Barrow, the rest in eight villages scattered on the tundra.
There's really no bushes or anything like that. It's a vast amount of land that really has nothing on it except like grazing grounds. It's really nothing there. And barren ground and windswept. But there is game, and we've managed to survive up there over the years.
ASRC is surviving as well. Shareholders have received dividends for the past 3 years, and the corporation is operating in the black. And it's the black gold, oil, that is largely responsible for the financial well-being. Chevron, Mobil, and Union Amoco have leases on nearly all of the corporation's lands, most of them adjacent to the western and southern boundaries of NPRA, National Petroleum Reserve Alaska. NPRA, formerly called PET 4, is a 34,000 square mile area of the North Slope, created in 1923 by the federal government.
We were precluded from ever selecting land from NPRA, which was the subsurface. We could select the surface for the village corporations, but the subsurface was retained because the petroleum reserve was a reserve for the federal government. And so in all the lands that we had for the villages, we have four villages in PET 4, we had to make what's called in-lieu selections, which was subsurface selections outside of NPRA. But in light of that, after the settlement, the D2 legislation, the Alaska Lands legislation came on, we were able to float an amendment, what was called a severed estate amendment, where we have the right to go back into NPRA once they opened it up for lease sales. And so we do have that amendment. If there is a strike, let's say within 75-mile radius of any village, we have the right to go back in and pick up the subsurface within 40 years, but only under the village lands.
A 1977 survey of North Slope Eskimos conducted by the Institute of Social and Economic Research of the University of Alaska showed nearly equal numbers saying that there were good effects due to oil development and that more jobs were available as those stating that there were bad effects on game and the environment. Levitt estimates that the oil industry has spent $250,000 on exploration. Most of that has involved ASRC subsidiaries, partnerships, and joint ventures, including construction companies, one union, another non-union, technical and engineering services, and a company that owns and operates oil rigs. Cook Inlet Region Incorporated is a partner in that firm. In addition, ASRC owns a media production facility, Barrow Cable TV, a hotel in Barrow, and a school bus system. But most of the investments are oil-related and development-directed.
Well, sure, because Congress in its wisdom said that you corporations shall be profit motive organizations. And one other things that we do in having these large construction companies is keeping our people working and at the same time looking for the for oil and gas on our own lands. And we are continually looking, and I'm sure that one day that we will find one. It'll be a great benefit to all of the Alaska Natives, not just for Arctic Slope.
It'll be a benefit due to the 7i revenue-sharing provision of ANCSA. Already, by the end of 1979, ASRC distributed $9.5 million to the other in-state regional native corporations as required, and received, during the same period of time, $171,000 from all the other regions combined. With 95% of their land conveyed, significant deposits of coal, oil, and gas, and an aggressive development posture, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation is likely to continue making significant payments under 7i. Treasurer Oliver Levitt.
I would think and would like to believe that Arctic Slope is one of the top ones up there. We have always jumped in probably a lot faster than some of the regions because of our ability to not baffled about whether we should decide or not. We've always been able to have that confidence among each other as directors that if we're going to decide something, we better do it pretty fast or the world's going to go right by us.
When you're born and raised on Alaska land,
When you're born and raised on Alaskan land, it's hard to see change come. Some stay and try to fight it, while others turn and run. We've tried both ways, and now we're trying just to understand. You can slow it down, but it's hard to stop the changing of this land.
We're playing high-stakes games, and to move too fast sometimes can be real dangerous.
Dave Williams is Vice President of Lands for Doyon Limited, the regional native corporation for the interior. Doyon is the Athabascan Indian word for chief or leader, and Doyon leads all others in land entitlement. 9 million acres of surface and subsurface rights, most of it from the land lost provision, plus 3.5 million acres of surface estate, making Doyon, once the land is all conveyed, the state's largest private landowner.
It runs from the top of mountains to river bottoms with big trees on it. It's a very fruitful land in a lot of ways. You see the solar basins with all of the game and waterfowl. It's land that's got a lot of promise.
According to Williams, Doyon's approach is careful, not developmental. Tim Wallace is Doyon's president.
Development does not take in all really but a small percentage of the land that we're dealing with. None of the activities to date have been within the 25 townships surrounding the villages. Whenever we go into, plan to go into those areas, we will be consulting with the villages and we will plan with extreme care so that we do not disturb any of the traditions or trap lines or existing fish camps or what have you.
This is the Doyon region.
Dave Williams.
Superimposed on the state of Alaska at a 1 to 1 million scale. There's about 122 million acres encompassed within the region.
Some of that vast acreage has been explored for development potential, for major minerals.
We ran a big program from 75 through 80, exploring the land, the deficiency lands within the region, to see what mineralization was out there and get an idea of what lands we should eventually end up with. And you know, some of that is the asbestos.
The Tanana Asbestos Corporation, a wholly owned subsidiary of Doyon's, has been evaluating the potential of an asbestos deposit 45 miles southwest of the village of Eagle. Analysis indicates the quality is excellent, and Tim Wallace anticipates the mine will be one of the largest in the world. There are other investments as well.
Construction, Arctic resources, this has moved back in-house.
In 1980, Doyon had a net worth of $54 million and made a net profit of close to $500,000. In 1979, the corporation had more than $1 million in profits. Doyon recently invested $20 million to acquire a 40% interest in an airline and is pursuing the possibility of building or buying an oil refinery in the interior. The corporation invested in a feature film on the life of champion dog musher and Doyon shareholder George Atla, is a stockholder in United Bank Alaska, has two joint venture construction companies, one heavily involved in oil field and pipeline work, owns a hotel on Maui, has percentages in oil lease tracts in the Beaufort Sea, and also has interests in firms involved with land surveying and non-renewable resource reconnaissance. Along with the asbestos near Eagle, one of Doyon Limited's 28 villages, significant amounts of gold and zinc have been found elsewhere, and exploration work continues for other hard rock minerals and oil and gas. Lands Vice President Williams doesn't feel all this exploration will significantly alter the land.
Gee, you know, you have to put your far-seeing goggles on. In my lifetime, a lot of the land will look just like it looks right now. The rigs and the pits will be on an insignificant acreage.
Doyon Limited President Tim Wallace.
To secure the fact that we're going to be able to continue our way of life is we're going to have a lot of encroachments. And in order to have strength, we'll need the economic strength to help combat it.
You have been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years. the seventh program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, Otz and Nedra Kilcher, Sebastian McGinty and George Silas, and the Point Hope Episcopal Church Congregation. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Star Route Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.